hear the first case. I understand that counsel for appellant had an adventure in getting here this morning. I apologize for the city of New Orleans, for which I take no responsibility, but glad you made it. We will hear in Daniel versus Universal INSCO from the appellant.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Jim Ruberino. I represent Mr. Daniel. It was quite an adventure getting here this morning, a perfect storm of traffic problems.
Oh, I see you live here.
I do live here. Fault. I was just trying to get here from Kenner. I left 45 minutes early, trying to get here early.
How do you pronounce your last name?
Aruberina. Aruberina.
Aruberina.
Okay.
Is that all right if I call you counsel?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Jim, that work. Okay. Judges, this case, I'd like to suggest to you that it's not a layoff case. It's an evaluation case, or an evaluation slash termination case. I think the biggest mistake the district court made was the determination that, and I'll just quote from the court, that here, although the performance review increased plaintiff's chances of termination, it only had a tangential effect on future adverse employment decisions. Your Honor, it is uncontested. The defendant has not accused the plaintiff of having problems with arguing with someone or asking for things he doesn't deserve or complaining. That's not why he wasn't selected for that. He was selected for the layoff. It's not a case where we have to prove that he was clearly better qualified than other people who were retained. It's clear the only reason they didn't select him for the layoff was because his evaluation changed from average of 8 over 10 or 4 over 5 to 3 over 10. And the defendant simply says his evaluation was low, and that's why he was laid off. And so, Your Honor, it's just wrong to say that the evaluation had a tangential effect. The evaluation is what caused the termination. And so the judge, district court in the case, looked at the case and first did an intentional discrimination analysis showing that the plaintiff was a member of the protected class, he was qualified, and then discussed whether or not he had adverse treatment. And I believe the district court did find that there was adverse treatment, but not for the termination. And then jumped to a layoff analysis for the termination. And the court did the four-step.
Part of the reason the court said that was just the chronology, because mm-hmm. the court found that the RIF, reduction in force, mm-hmm. the discussions implementing it had preceded the evaluation, right?
Well, I think, Judge, that
that's at least what the district court said. You think that's wrong, that the record doesn't reflect that there had been a decision to implement the reduction in force prior to the negative evaluation?
No, Judge. I think that the way I'm seeing the case is that the issue is, why did his evaluation change from March of 2008, where he was given an excellent evaluation, and then in December of 2008, all of a sudden he had good evaluations every year prior, and then all of a sudden it dropped.
Right.
And you know, of course, we have claimed that the motivations are either intentional discrimination or retaliation. And I'll speak a little bit about the retaliation in the sense that, you know, I know there's difficulty there in the sense that his complaints didn't explicitly say, you know, discrimination because of national origin, discrimination because of age. I do think this is the kind of case, though. He's obviously from Iran. He's obviously identifies himself as Muslim, like someone would identify themselves.
Those are, and I know you want to get to those issues,
yeah.
And those are important, and
mm-hmm.
they're issues, you're right. But mm-hmm. just remembering what the district court thought this record reflected, I thought that the district court pointed out that this ultimate employment action, the termination, was tangentially related, couldn't have been caused by any alleged discrimination in the evaluation, because the company had already decided to institute it before the negative evaluation.
Well, Judge, we're not trying to say that they concocted the plan for a layoff just to get rid of him.
Okay.
We're just saying that he was included in the layoff because he was slammed in the evaluation. We're not saying that the layoff was a scheme or a part of the discrimination. Okay. So the fact that they may have been talking about having a layoff that preceded and his adverse treatment, which is the evaluation is the adverse treatment, the primary adverse
treatment.
That's
what I wanted to know. And so the evaluation is the adverse treatment.
And so the fact that the company may have been discussing laying people off even a year before that is irrelevant. The point is that that's not what we're saying. We're not saying the layoff is some kind of conspiracy just to get rid of this gentleman, the plaintiff. We're just saying that the evaluation is what caused him to get fired. This is a kind of company, it's a bunch of engineers, they work on projects. There's going to be periodic layoffs when the projects end. And everybody knows that if your evaluation crashes and you go down to 3 out of 10, you're gone. That in itself is a termination here.
Then I think you want to move to where you were going, which is if you look at your client's emails after the negative evaluation, I think there's sort of one or two rhetorical questions that use the word discrimination. But
yes.
Much more, it's him saying, I did better work than you say. There's very little that seems to me, or maybe this is what you want to address, that he says, you did this because I'm Muslim, or you might have thought I was Muslim, even though I'm not a practicing Muslim.
I believe that we have alleged that, and he alleges that, and we have alleged that. I agree that he didn't say it explicitly in his complaints. He said, you're discriminating against me. You're violating my rights. But the issue isn't the as much. I'd like you to see it going on two rails at the same time, the intentional possible claim of intentional discrimination, age, national origin, religion, and then the possibility of intentional retaliation. You have to make a decision whether or not in this kind of case, with someone who's obviously identifies themselves at least culturally, like a Jewish person might say, I'm Jewish, but they don't go to synagogue. Well, a person from the Middle East, from Iran, who obviously looks like he's Iranian, he speaks like he's Iranian, he says he's Muslim.
That's a hard and interesting philosophical question. Yeah. Do you have a case that says, focusing just on religious discrimination, that even if you're not an adherent to the religion, you still can make a prima facie case of it because others might have thought you were part of that religion? Do you know a case that makes that connection?
No, Judge, we look.
Hard. But you, of course, do say age discrimination.
Yes.
And let's say we have a prima facie case of that. Then their response is?
Well, I believe they're saying that because he didn't, in the issue of retaliation, I believe they're saying that he didn't say retaliate, he didn't say age, he didn't say, they're just saying there's no protected activity. You know, and I think it is an interesting question. And, of course, it wasn't not for not looking to find a case where someone who's, once he said, you're breaking the law, you're violating my rights, you know, they knew what he was talking about. But now, when we're trying to litigate the case, because he didn't say, you're discriminating against me because of my age or because I'm Iranian or because I identify as a Muslim, then we know there's an issue there on you finding protected activity. So that's why I accept that problem. I would love for you to be the case to see that it's obvious that that's what he was talking about. But getting to the other line of reasoning, the other theory, which is the intentional discrimination, and I just wanted to, you know, kind of point out to the court the issues of there are certain parts of this case that am I going to get some kind of this is my time right here. Okay. I just wanted to point out, and did I answer your question, Judge?
Yeah. No,
okay.
Keep going.
Okay. I just wanted to point out that there's things that can be adjudicated on the issue of the intentional discrimination. Putting the retaliation aside for a moment, whether or not there's an issue that his evaluation changed from March of 2008 to December of 2008 from really good, almost perfect, to useless and worthless, in that and we've alleged, for example, Mr. Koss on the Andridge project, when the plaintiff was placed under the supervision of Mr. Andrus, and Mr. Andrus assigned a young engineer named Koss to manage the plaintiff, there had been sort of a narrative developing. Remember the complaint about asking for the plotter, to use the plotter. The complainant asked to use it, and then he said he wasn't allowed to do it, and then he said, you're going to be sorry, the company's going to be sorry, and it's going to be legal. He didn't throw his arms up. He didn't scream. But it was an incredibly unfairly adversarial write-up to say that's workplace violence, just saying the company's going to be sorry and it's legal. And then that narrative of him, he asked Mr. Koss for, he was put in a storage room to work, and he asked one question about it. And then all of a sudden, it shows up on his he's a younger engineer, that shows up on his evaluation, as always asking questions, always arguing about where he works. Then he was moved to the Bigelow Group, and he was placed under the management of two identifying Jews, Mr. Yuri Takaman and Tanya Straka. And those people, those particular engineers, were allowed to also continue that narrative, Mr. Daniels complains too much, on the evaluation. I submit to you, Judge, that if you look at what was briefed by the defendant, my client asserted that in an affidavit in the case, so it's evidence under oath. The defendant did not brief that. He didn't oppose the fact that, and I'll say the first names, Yuri and Tanya were Jewish, and that they may have done something that was adversarial because of that. Because plaintiff asserts under oath that they, once they realized he was from Iran, that he identified as Muslim, there was a complete change of personality in the way they treated him. And so that was an allegation he made. We don't believe the defendant briefed against that. So that's an issue of material fact on the issue of intentional discrimination. The motivation for allowing these two individual persons identifying as Jewish, putting in this narrative that Mr. Netzel had appeared to be developing after the incident with him asking about the plotter, that my client is a complainer. He had been there, perfect evaluation in 2006, perfect evaluation in 2008, perfect evaluation in March of 2008, even by Netzel standards. And then all of a sudden, he's managed by a younger engineer under the Andrus Group, Mr. Koss. There's a complaint, there's narrative, he keeps complaining. And then Bigelow is allowed to put input in. He started with Bigelow in July of 2008. Then the killer evaluation comes in December of 2008, and my client alleged that Bigelow was allowed these two Jewish individuals, Yuri and Tanya, to feed that narrative that he's complaining all the time. Then all of a sudden he's worthless. The December 2008 evaluation comes in. That's the end of his employment. Doesn't matter when they started, because they're always thinking of planning layoffs. This is an engineering company. They work on projects. They don't have a stable engineering force. If you're rated 3 out of 10, you're going to be gone the next time a project ends. So that's my primary argument on issues that we think the court would just like you to look at that. I believe we briefed it, but I'm just trying to focus you on this two lines of reasoning. Would I like you to say this is protected activity? Would I like you to say that this is valid, that when he complained in 2007 after the incident of the plotter,
protected class?
The protected class, I was saying.
Would you say is your strongest case?
You mean in terms of protected class, in terms of what he was complaining about, potentially for protected activity or just intentional discrimination?
Well, is it race? Is it
I would say intentional
religion?
I would say intentional discrimination. We have, I would say, age and national origin.
Age is the first.
Yeah, age with cost between the younger engineer under the Andrus Group that continue the narrative that he's a complainer, and then the two Jewish individuals through Bigelow, the national origin. So I would say the primary protected class that I would emphasize is age and national origin. But once again, national origin, when people come from the Middle East, when they come from Iran, even if they don't actively practice the Islam faith, they're still identifying like a Jew would identify that doesn't go to synagogue. I'm Muslim, but they don't necessarily, they're not dogmatic Muslims. And so, but anyway, I would say the primary protected class is age and national origin, being from Iran. He's obviously from Iran. He has a very thick Arabic accent. He looks like he's from Iran. So that would be the protected class. And then on the protected activity, if you would accept that because of this obviousness that he's from Iran, that he identifies as Muslim, that when he said, you're treating me unfair, it's not legal, it's illegal, what you're doing, it was obvious he was talking about that. Did I find a case? I would be telling you about it. If the written protected activity didn't explicitly say, but it was obvious from the circumstances, that what he was talking about, I did look for that. Mm-hmm. If you find it, please tell me. But this, you could be the case, and I would ask you to consider that, judges. But I just want you to consider, I'm coming to the end of my time right now, the dual line of thinking, and that we do have issues of material fact, especially on the intentional discrimination, what happened between March of 2008 and February of 2008, and the things that the defendant, I pointed out to you, did not oppose concerning the intentional discrimination. I believe that's our strongest claim, the intentional discrimination, age, and national origin. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, counsel. Thank you.
Okay.
Good morning, and if it pleases the court, my name is Charles Wilson. I'm here on behalf of the appellees. And I'd like to present our argument. Whether we look at this case from a de novo standpoint or without a de novo review, the district court correctly granted summary judgment in favor of Universal Ensco. Mr. Daniel was terminated as part of a company-wide reduction in force, which resulted in the separations of 143 individuals. Many of these individuals were younger than Mr. Daniel. Many of these individuals were terminated as part of this reduction in force with higher evaluation ratings. As Judge Higginson pointed out, and as the district court pointed out below, the wheels were already in motion with respect to the reduction in force well before the evaluation, and more importantly, the February 2009 emails that Daniel points to as his protected speech or his protected activity on which his retaliation claim is based. The evaluation was a component of that decision, but keep in mind, this was a time in the economy, in the marketplace, where there just wasn't enough work, and that was the driver behind the decision.
Well, it was the driver behind the decision to implement the RIF. But then once you actually, the company acts on the RIF, it really is a pretty clear, if you're less than four, you're going, right? Since his evaluation was a three, that was maybe more than a component. It was sort of the death knell for him. You're still saying the decision to evaluate him doesn't reflect discriminatory animus, but are you also saying that that evaluation wasn't that important? I thought that was sort of the place mark, and he's out.
Yes, I'll try to answer each of those questions. The performance evaluation rating certainly was a significant factor. It was not a discriminatory factor, as demonstrated below in the record. Individuals with higher evaluations of different ages and national origins were also subject to the same criteria. In fact, during the RIF, individuals with ratings of six or higher were eventually laid off. So when I say and you're right. The driver behind the reduction in force was the lack of work. But obviously, in carrying it out, the company came up with the criteria for selecting the individuals.
Something I couldn't see just in going through the record. It looks like the human resources section did Mr. King,
yes,
interviewed and came to a conclusion about this whole unpleasantness. Do you know where in the record, or whether that is in the record, the company's own internal report on this? Does that exist?
I don't think the record was fully developed on King's investigation of the February 2009 emails. I think we touched upon it, but keep in mind, by that time, and assuming that these emails even amount to protected opposition activity. We don't think they do, because they are at best rhetorical in nature. And when you read them, they ad nauseum talk about how good his work was and how the overall decision was unfair.
Is the only reference in those emails to discrimination one that is a rhetorical question? Or are there some statements that I was discriminated against?
There are some statements, from what I can remember, where Mr. Daniel says in passing, I believe that this was unfair. I believe that this might have been discriminatory. Those were looked into by Human Resources. Now, again, by the time Mr. Daniel delivered these emails in February of 2009, the decision to the decision to implement a reduction in force had already been made. In fact, the district court pointed out, as was developed in the record, layoffs had already begun to start in January of 2009. So we think that even if the February 2009 emails could be considered protected conduct, there's no causal link between those emails and the decision to include Daniel in the reduction in force, simply because the decision had already been made in December, as early as December of 2008, and Daniel was going to be included along with the other 142 individuals.
The only other record uncertainty I had is, was Daniel's salary or title ever changed? And specifically, I was wondering whether he was reduced from senior engineer to just whatever. You'll know what I'm talking about.
Yes. He maintained the position of lead engineer throughout his tenure, his second employment period with defendants. His job title did not change. More importantly, his duties, his substantial duties did not change. And his pay did not change. His pay and benefits did not change. They were not reduced. So throughout his employment, his second particular employment period in particular, there was no objective demotion in the sense that he was somehow given a less prestigious position from an objective standpoint. With respect to, I want to talk about the age and national origin claims. I think appellants said that those could be their strongest claims, and again, and this was developed in the record, Mr. Daniel was hired when he was well over 40, his second time. In fact, when he was hired the first time by Universal Lensco, he was 57 approximately. And we know that this is not determinative on his age discrimination claim, but it is certainly relevant, and it creates a presumption that if you're hired when you're well over 40 and rehired, that undercuts or should undercut your age discrimination claim. And likewise, with respect to the national origin claim, again, Mr. Daniel's national origin did not change during his two periods of employment, and Zunga, his supervisor, who hired him the first time, clearly understood and knew or suspected his national origin during the first period of employment, as well as the second. And so I say all that because this just adds additional facts demonstrating that there was no discriminatory intent. There was no motivation, if you will, to discriminate against Daniel because of his age. Because, again, the reduction in force was not limited to individuals of certain national origins or ages or genders, if you will. 143 individuals were terminated. And as Wendy Donahue, the Human Resources Director at the time, explained, there were Canadians that were terminated as part of that reduction in force. There were individuals that were younger than Daniel that were terminated. 15 individuals in Daniel's same group, included engineers like him, were terminated as part of the reduction in force. The driver behind it was simply there just wasn't enough work, unfortunately, at the time. Appellees didn't touch upon the retaliation claim that much. I think the record speaks for itself, and our briefing speaks for itself on those issues. And I would add that a lot of these decisions are, in fact, time-barred in any event. And I noticed that appellees only discussed the evaluation and the termination. So I'm a little early. So unless you have any additional questions, we'll end right now. I can offer some rebuttal, maybe afterwards.
No rebuttal necessary. We'll keep with the usual format. I appreciate the time back. We'll hear a different rebuttal.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Judges, counsel just admitted that the evaluation was a significant factor. It's obviously the cause of the termination. It is not tangential. So this is, you know, the case is about what happened between March of 2008 when he was evaluated perfectly and December of 2008 when he was evaluated. And, Your Honor, you asked a question, doesn't that automatically mean you're going to be terminated no matter when the reduction in force thought process began? Obviously, it could have. It's always in process. They're always thinking about reducing in force. And it doesn't matter. That's a very important point. Also, Judge.
Let me make sure the importance that you're putting on that in the term of our doctrine. We have held that a evaluation in and of itself is not an adverse employment action because it doesn't have the kind of ramifications or the kind of effect on employment at that time. Now, your point, it seems to me, is well taken, that if, in fact, it becomes the time bomb, ready to go off whenever there is the next cycle of layoffs, that's something else. But it doesn't mean you can sue, which is what the adverse employment action itself would be seeking. You would have your cause of action complete at the time of the evaluation. And so I think all our doctrine is probably saying is that is not a time yet to show your damages, to show that your cause of action is complete. But it seems to me you might still have your argument, which is what you're doing.
Yes, sir.
That subsequently, this employment decision, if so grossly, so extraordinarily affected by the evaluation, was in fact infected by discrimination. So we are considering your, I am considering your factual allegations, which are still subject to disagreement with.
Yes, Judge. That is my argument, exactly my argument. And I also like to point out, Judge, counsel's attempt to not say it, but argue the same actor inference. There is no same actor inference here. You know, the same people, whenever he was hired the first time or later, you know, whether or not they knew he was Iranian or how old he was, different individuals were involved in the adverse treatment. So when counsel was arguing that, there's some inference or some assumption that if the company hired him when he was old, they wouldn't terminate him later because of his age. Or they hired him when they knew he was
Doesn't that require the same decision maker, basically, the hiring
yes,
and
Your Honor.
Firing?
It requires the same decision maker, and that's not in the record. Okay. Different decision makers made the adverse employment decisions. But yes, Judge, what you were saying about the significant factor, it is not tangential. It is a significant factor. It is the cause of the termination. So it's an evaluation. It's a termination case. It's not a layoff case. And so it's just whether or not there's evidence in the record as to whether or not intentional discrimination or intentional retaliation, however you see it, either one, either or, is the cause. There's enough evidence on each side. I pointed out to you evidence that my client submitted in his affidavit that when he was working under Bigelow, two Jewish individuals were allowed to input unfair allegations into the evaluation. When he was working under Andrus after March of 2008, another individual, Cass, a younger engineer, continued this narrative of him being a complainer, and that's what crashed his evaluation, and that was his termination, ultimate termination event. You asked counsel, were there statements? Did he say, I think you asked someone, did he say discrimination? Many times he said, you are discriminating against me. You are impugning my rights. I agree he didn't say because of my age or because I'm from Iran or because of my Muslim identity. But that's obviously what he was talking about. And I think that from the context, I hope one day a court will find protected activity when it's obvious from the context what the plaintiff is talking about. But anyway, we still have two claims, you know, the retaliation, the intentional discrimination, age, national origin. And judges, that would be my main points that I wanted to make. Just wanted to remind you that in March of 2008, he, in spite of everything that was said, he was rated as almost perfect in quality, excellent in initiative. Almost perfect, 4 in adaptability, 4 in teamwork, and then all of a sudden, that's after 3 or 4 years of working perfectly, everything goes down the tank because of working for a younger engineer under Andrus, working for two Jewish engineers under Bigelow. That's where the potential conflict of evidence comes for a trial. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you. Thank you both for bringing this to us today.